In our study in the book of Genesis, we're still in chapter 9. A couple of more thoughts before we leave the opening verses there of Genesis chapter 9, and we'll read verse 6 of that opening passage. Genesis chapter 9 and verse 6. Whoever sheds man's blood, by man his blood shall be shed, for in the image of God he made man. Here we see God establishing capital punishment by human government. And the human race had already experienced violence and murder at the very beginning of the human race. And so that tendency to such violence and hatred that leads to murder, it begins in the heart, as all sins do. But when it is left uncontrolled, it often leads to murder. And in this ninth chapter, we've already seen how God has expressed the great value that he places on human life. And so to emphasize that even more, he wants man to understand that there are consequences for disregarding human life. And so to help restrain man's tendency to murder, obviously it doesn't eliminate it, but this threat of penalty does act as a deterrent for some. Obviously, for some it does not, but it does put somewhat of a restraint on man who might consider murder as a very legitimate response to injustices or anger or selfishness. And so God institutes in this passage the dispensation of human government, man governing man. Now, obviously, God is the God of the universe, and he is the one who is over all. But here, God himself institutes human government. God set this up for the good of man, to keep there from being chaos in society. And this was why God instituted human government after the flood. So society here is given the authority to execute God's righteous judgment on those who take the lives of others. That's God's standard, and it's God's justice that is being executed, but he chooses to allow human government to be that instrument. So the God-given authority, God has given authority to governments. You may not always agree with governments, and there are many throughout the world. And as I've said many a time, I believe that democracy in this sin-filled world is probably the best option for governing that there are. But still, democracy is not without its faults. Why? Because man's in charge, and man will always corrupt whatever he touches. Nonetheless, God has established these governments to execute justice, and this same truth is repeated in the New Testament. So let's turn to Romans 13 so that we understand that this is still in force. God ordaining human government, man governing man, in order to have some form of order, and specifically in this case, to restrain that tendency of man to kill man. And we've seen it all through history, haven't we? And we're experiencing it yet today. Romans 13, 1-7. Paul, talking to believers here, talking to us. Let every soul be subject to the governing authorities. Now remember, when he wrote this, who was Paul's authority that he was subject to? Caesar, the Roman government. Was that a godly government? No, it was one of the most ungodly. Now, there was order, there was laws, there was punishment for murder, but the government itself as a whole was not characterized by godliness. But nonetheless, under that governing authority, the Apostle Paul wrote these words, "Let every soul be subject to the governing authorities, for there is no authority except from God." In other words, God allows it. It doesn't mean that God approves of all the unrighteous deeds that governments do. But he has allowed those governments for a time and for a purpose. For there is no authority except from God, and the authorities that exist are appointed by God. Therefore, whoever resists the authority resists the ordinance of God. That's pretty strong language, isn't it? And those who resist will bring judgment on themselves. For rulers are not a terror to good works, this is the ideal, but to evil. Do you want to be unafraid of the authority? Do what is good, and you will have praise from the same. For He is God's minister to you for good. But if you do evil, be afraid. For he does not bear the sword in vain, for he is God's minister and avenger to execute wrath on him who practices evil. Therefore you must be subject not only because of wrath, but also for conscience' sake before God. For because of this you also pay taxes. Oh, wow. Now we're getting right down to where we live. You pay taxes, for they are God's ministers attending continually to this very thing. Render, therefore, to all their due, taxes to whom taxes are due, customs to whom customs, fear to whom fear, honor to whom honor. And so God has ordained these authority, these governments, simply that there would be order, to put restraint on some of the evil practices of man against man. And specifically here, capital punishment is approved of God and established by God. Capital punishment obviously should be carefully regulated. Sadly, there have been innocent individuals that have been executed. And that, again, is a flaw of the human race. But capital punishment itself is ordained of God for those who take a life, because God places a value on life, and so judgment needs to be executed, and he's chosen human government, man, to execute that judgment on those who are found guilty of that kind of murder. Again, I believe that every possible effort should be made to make sure that all the facts are irrefutable. But once that is established, those that say, you know, it's cruel and shouldn't be done in this advanced society in which we're in, well, I have to say what God says in his word. God says it is something that he has ordained, once again, when it is actually proven that one has taken the life of another. And then also in that passage, we didn't go back and read there, but if you're looking in chapter 9 of Genesis, in those opening verses, we see that God, as a sign of his covenant with Noah and all of the animal world, he places the rainbow in the sky, the rainbow of his grace. God promises never again to destroy the human race or animal life with a universal flood. Now, if you'll look at the language there, it doesn't mean that there'll never be floods. And obviously, we know that there's been many a flood since then. But not one who destroys all of humanity and all of animal life, and that is universal throughout the planet. God says that will never happen again. And as a sign of that promise, he points to the rainbow. Now, today, the rainbow has been stolen as a sign for different reasons. But for us as Christians, we understand that this is a symbol of his grace. Now, he doesn't say that man will never again not deserve to be eradicated because of their sin, but he says, I'll never do it by a universal flood again. And the rainbow was a reminder of that promise. And can you imagine without that kind of a sign and a promise? Can you imagine that every time it started to sprinkle, what would be going through their mind? Oh, my. Because before, they hadn't seen rain, not from the sky. There was a mist, but water came up from the earth as well as from the sky. And can you imagine when the next rainstorm came, how the terror that would have been in their hearts if it weren't for this promise and that symbol? And oh, there it is. Now, scientifically, we know what a rainbow, why it's formed, and the prism that the water droplets form. We understand the science of it, but God did too. God made every molecule, and he knew exactly what water droplets would do with the sun in a rainstorm. And he says, that's my promise to you, that I will never again destroy the earth with a universal flood. That was a wonderful comfort for Noah and that generation who had gone through a horrible flood. But when I stop and think about the sign of God's grace for us in this church age, I look back at the cross as our rainbow of grace, to know what Jesus accomplished on the cross for us. It assures us that we are not appointed to wrath. So that rainbow in Noah's day, that God will never again pour out his wrath through the flood. I look at the cross and I understand that God will never pour out his wrath on me because of what Jesus accomplished on the cross, Romans chapter 5 and verses 8 to 11. And if it were not for the cross, whenever any storm of temptation or failure on my part, I would be tempted to think, oh no, I'm now going to experience the wrath of God. I've messed up. But when I look at the cross, not just a wooden figure, but when I look at the work of the cross, I understand that even though I may go through some storms, just like Noah did, went through many storms in his many years following the flood, and yet he knew that those storms weren't going to kill him. They weren't going to wipe out the human race. When I go through the storms of life, whether it be my own failures or any other kind of storm, I know I'm not going to face the wrath of God because I look at the work of the cross, Romans 5, verses 8 to 11. But God demonstrates his own love toward us in that while we were still sinners, Christ died for us. Much more then, having been justified by his blood, that is, by his sacrificial death, we shall be saved from wrath through him. For if when we were enemies we were reconciled to God through the death of his Son, much more, having been reconciled, we shall be saved by his life. And not only that, but we also rejoice in God through our Lord Jesus Christ, through whom we have now received the reconciliation. Let's also read 1 Peter 4 and verse 10. 1 Peter 4:10. The grace of God that provided his Son, that I might never again have to fear the wrath of God. 1 Peter 4:10. As each one has received a gift, minister it to one another as good stewards of the manifold grace of God. That word manifold in the Greek, it means many-colored or variegated. The manifold grace of God. When I look at the cross, the work of the cross, to me it's that rainbow of grace that I never have to fear the wrath of God, because that wrath fell on Jesus Christ. Just as it fell on the ark that protected Noah, the wrath of God that I deserved fell on Jesus on the cross. And that same assurance of his grace causes us to know that in every storm of life, every trial, every hardship, we don't have to panic. We don't have to think, oh no, how's this all going to end? Because we can't see the end from the beginning. But we can look at the rainbow cross and say, but I know this will not be my destruction. Sorrow, death, sickness, that's not my end. Romans 8:28. We know all things work together for good to those who love God, to those who are called according to his purpose. 2 Corinthians 4:16 and 18, 16 through 18. 2 Corinthians 4:16. These are foundation scriptures for us in the midst of trials, but the reason these are true is because of the work of the cross. Therefore, we do not lose heart when the raindrops start falling. We don't lose heart. Even though our outward man is perishing, yet the inward man is being renewed day by day. For our light affliction, which is but for a moment, is working for us a far more exceeding and eternal weight or measure of glory. While we do not look at the things which are seen, not the raindrops, but the rainbow, but at the things which are not seen. For the things which are seen are temporary, but the things which are not seen are eternal. Well, let's go on to verse 18 of Genesis 9. Let's turn back to Genesis chapter 9. We'll read verses 18 through 29. We won't get very far here, but we'll get a little started. Genesis 9, 18 to 29. Now the sons of Noah who went out of the ark were Shem, Ham, and Japheth. And Ham was the father of Canaan. Now remember, Moses is writing this. And at the time, in Moses' generation, of course, he was leading the children of Israel out of Egypt and into the land of Canaan. And so this is why he makes a special reference to the son of Ham, to the son of Ham, which is Canaan, because the Canaanites descended from him. And to help the Israelites understand how God was going to deal with the Canaanites. And so this is why the reference is made here so early. In verse 19, these three were the sons of Noah, and from these the whole earth was populated. Every human being has descended from these three families, from Noah and his three sons. And every nationality and ethnicity can be traced back to one of these three groups. And Noah began to be a farmer, and he planted a vineyard. Then he drank of the wine and was drunk, and became uncovered, naked, in his tent. And Ham, the father of Canaan, saw the nakedness of his father and told his two brothers outside. But Shem and Japheth took a garment, laid it on both their shoulders, and went backward and covered the nakedness of their father. Their faces were turned away, and they did not see their father's nakedness. In that day, and throughout the Old Testament among the Jews, it was a great dishonor and shame to see the nakedness of your father. And we see that that was true in Noah's day as well. Verse 24, so Noah awoke from his wine and knew what his younger son had done to him. What we're going to find out is that God's judgment that he pronounces on Canaan, not Ham, he doesn't pronounce it on Ham, was actually prophecy about how God was going to judge the Canaanites who followed in the footsteps of the vileness that is indicated here by Ham. And so in verse 25, then he said, cursed be Canaan, a servant of servants he shall be to his brethren. And he said, blessed be the Lord, the God of Shem, and may Canaan be his servant. May God enlarge Japheth. Now, from Shem descended Abraham and the Hebrews, the Shemites. This is why anti-Semitism, this is where the word comes from, because they're descendants from Shem. So the Canaanites will be the slaves of the descendants of Shem, or in this case, of the Jews, and then also of Japheth. So this speaks of the other Gentile nations that would also conquer the Canaanites. And so this is a prophecy concerning what was to come. And verse 26, and he said, blessed be the Lord, the God of Shem, and may Canaan be his servant. May God enlarge Japheth, and may he dwell in the tents of Shem, and may Canaan be his servant. And Noah lived after the flood 350 years. So all the days of Noah were 950 years, and he died. Well, let's see. How far do we want to go here? I think we'll stop there, because I don't want to cut anything short here. Let's maybe have a song or two in closing tonight.